Welcome to Without Fear, Life, Death, and Everything in Between, a podcast for anyone ready to embrace life's ultimate truth. It ends. I'm Death Doula Alexis Hughes, here to break down barriers around mortality through heartfelt conversations, personal insights, and practical tools for facing the end with courage and intention. Whether you're curious about death, navigating grief, or seeking ways to live more fully, this is your safe space to explore life's most transformative topics. Together, we'll turn fear into understanding and silence into connection.
Welcome back to Without Fear, Life, Death, and Everything in Between. I am Alexis Hughes, your resident death doula, life coach, and professional reminder that this whole human being thing is really weird. Today, I want to talk about something I see every day in my work and have absolutely lived through myself. And that is just the fact that grief makes you weird. No one talks about this part of loss. We're prepared for the sadness, the crying, the casseroles, but no one really prepares you for the fact that grief can make you eat nothing but Cheerios for 2 weeks or lash out at a friend for saying the wrong thing just once, spend $300 on crystals, start organizing your sock drawer at 3 a.m. like a maniac, or stare at a wall for so long that you forget how time works. Here's the thing. That's normal. Grief is not logical. It's not linear. It doesn't follow 5 neat stages. Sorry, Kubler-Ross. It is a shapeshifter. It rearranges your brain, your body, and your behavior. I always remind those around me and my clients that grief comes in waves. It's not linear. It's not ABC, 1, 2, 3. It will quiet itself and then sneak up on you completely out of nowhere and take you out in the middle of a Walmart, which we'll get to later. We tend to think of grief as an emotion, but it's not just an emotion. It is a whole body, whole mind state of being. What we think grief is supposed to look like is formulaic. You cry a little, you go to a funeral, you say some beautiful words, you wear black, maybe you eat a casserole that somebody dropped off, and then you go back to work. You move on and get over it. But what actually happens? You forget your passwords, cry in the middle of Walmart, you stare at the phone for 45 minutes and then throw it across the room because someone dared to send you a text that said, "Hey, I hope you're doing okay." And you're not okay. Because the thing is, you might not be okay in ways that feel unfamiliar. Grief will crack open the floor beneath you and makes everything unrecognizable, including you. I know in the deepest throes of my grief, looking in the mirror and not recognizing the face that I saw looking back at me. And I want you to pause and acknowledge that. Because grief doesn't just make you sad, it makes you foreign, strange, almost unrecognizable. You might feel dissociated, like you are watching your life through a fog, or you might forget to eat for days or eat everything in sight and then still feel empty. You might lash out or withdraw or laugh in completely inappropriate moments. And one client told me that they started wearing their dad's old shirts every day and talking to his urn. I know it sounds unhinged, but it helped. And I told her, "Sounds normal. I went through a phase of wearing nothing but my mom's clothes after I lost her because that was the closest I could get to her." And when you're grieving, normal changes. And if you've heard any of the chats that I've shared from Dr. Arisi Dock, our president over at the National Home Funeral Alliance, she talks about how grief alters the brain. We're going to get into that because it does. Researchers have found that people in acute grief show heightened activity in the amygdala, which is the brain's fear center. It's through the lizard brain. And your brain is literally on high alert. It's interpreting your emotional pain as if it was a physical survival threat. In a 2003 study in the journal NeuroImage, they showed that grieving individuals had increased activation in the anterior cingulate cortex and the insula, areas linked to pain, empathy, and emotional regulation. Your brain is trying to reconcile a massive discrepancy in its reality. Someone was here, and now they're not. And that gap short circuits all of your internal systems. Even biologically, grief is a stress response. The body produces more cortisol, your immune system dips, and sleep becomes irregular. You are literally not yourself. And that's okay. Because grief isn't about going back to who you were. It's about becoming someone new with the weight of that love that is still inside you. You've probably often heard that grief is just love with nowhere to go. And that's true. It fundamentally changes you as a person and your interaction with life when you lose someone and experience great grief. And how it can look in real life could be losing track of time. You reread the same sentence five times because it just doesn't make sense. The words don't have meaning. You forget your own zip code at the pharmacy, or you feel like a sim. You walk into a room and you have no idea why. I liken that for any of you that have played the Sims game. It's just like that. Your Sims just kind of like walk around until you give them something to do. They'll walk into a room and go, ha, ba, 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 because they don't know why they're in there. Same deal. I feel like a sim all the time when I'm grieving. And that's not incompetence. Grief is breaking down your executive function. This foggy, slowed down state is so common, it's nicknamed grief brain. Like you hear moms talk about pregnancy brain. Same deal. Your frontal lobe, the part of your brain responsible for memory, judgment, and planning, just isn't firing the same way under that emotional load. So let's talk about some more neuroscience. When you're grieving, your prefrontal cortex, the logical, task-focused part of your brain, the one that allows you to make decisions and make plans and all that good stuff, takes a back seat. Your limbic system, which we've talked about before, your emotional control center, takes the wheel. And that's why grief can often show up as short-term memory loss, difficulty concentrating, trouble making decisions, and sudden emotional outbursts. You are literally not yourself. This isn't poetic metaphor. This is measurable, observable brain function. And Dr. Mary Frances O'Connor, in her book, The Grieving Brain, talks about how the brain has to relearn the world without your person in it. Your reality literally changes, and your brain formed pathways that included them, routes that helped you navigate daily life. And during my work with the Alzheimer's Association, this is something we talked about all the time with people who were experiencing dementia. Those neural pathways are being destroyed. So the way, if you think of your brain and the things that you do in your routines and think about likening it to a roadmap, on your way to work every day is the same, generally. It doesn't change. So it's really easy from your brain to go to point A to point B in those neural pathways. But then road construction, you lose someone. Now you have to bypass that pathway because the normal way we do things with that person included in life is no longer traversable. And your brain is having to redefine those neural pathways. So you're rebuilding a map. Those routes are gone. And you're doing all of that while you're in a fog. So, yeah, grief makes you weird because you're rewiring your brain in real time. Some people will cry nonstop, and some people don't cry at all. Some become hyperproductive, and others can't get out of bed. Grief doesn't have a rule book. None of this does. You weren't born into this life and handed an instruction manual. And society's expectations of appropriate mourning are way too narrow. I've worked with clients who became suddenly obsessed with cleaning or had to rewatch their old sitcoms or their safety shows, got unexpectedly angry at their pets, forgot how to cook, or developed strange rituals. I say strange, like counting stairs or folding socks in a specific way. That's all grief. And those things all go back to centering on control. It is something active you can be doing that you control, that you have action upon. And it's not about logic, it's about coping. Your brain is grasping any form of control. You're trying to survive. So let me tell you about someone I'll call Jamie. Jamie lost her partner of 12 years. They didn't cry at the funeral. They didn't cry a week later, but every night they would reorganize the pantry by color for hours, for weeks. Why? Because that's where grief lived for Jamie, in the alphabetized cans of corn and beans, in the illusion of control. And something I want to talk about for a second is grief rage. Rage at doctors, rage at God, rage at your loved one for dying, rage at yourself for not being enough, for not fixing it, not preventing it. Grief can show up as slammed doors, angry journaling, silent treatment, or just, if you're like me, screaming into the void at 3 a.m. I'm sure my neighbors thought we had a cryptid because I would just go out into the dark in the middle of the night, out in the middle of nowhere where I lived, and just scream. One of my clients told me that she started boxing during grief, full on punching a bag while sobbing, and another started baking six pies a day. But they were doing the same thing. They were moving grief through their body. Sometimes it's wearing your old partner's hoodie for 73 days straight without washing it. Here's the truth. We've been sold a narrative about grief that looks like a sad movie montage, but really it's spending hours playing World of Warcraft because the outside world is too much, or laughing at dark jokes because your nervous system needs to release good brain chemicals, or canceling every social interaction because you just can't deal with the small talk. And grief can show up in the strangest corners of our lives, and that doesn't make it any less real. But here's the truth. Grief isn't convenient for other people. Society tells us you want to cry, but not too much, or stay home, but don't isolate. Take time off, but get back to normal quickly. Mourn, but please don't make it too awkward for everyone around you. Grief, yes, we live in a society that says, yes, grieve, you're safe here. It's okay to be vulnerable. And then, oh, nope, not like that. Oh, too much. No. Because grief doesn't just make you weird, it makes other people deeply uncomfortable. Because what do? We don't talk about death enough. And so it weirds people out. It doesn't just make you weird, it makes everything weird. You live in a world that wants you to be presentable in your pain, polite, graceful, easy to digest. You get 3 days of bereavement leave and a sympathy card that says, they're in a better place. And then what? You're supposed to show up to work, smile politely, and stop talking about it after the funeral. And we will dive into that when we get back. We're going to take a short break, and then we will talk more about death and grief making you weird. Stay tuned.
Are you ready to embrace life's greatest truth, that it ends? Without fear, life, death, and everything in between, with death doula Alexis Hughes is your safe space to explore mortality without stigma. From heartfelt conversations and practical tools to personal insights on grief, healing, and living fully, this podcast breaks down the barriers surrounding death. Tune in on Transformation Talk Radio and start turning fear into understanding. Visit withoutfeardoula.com to learn more. Without Fear is a Chattanooga-based death doula practice helping individuals and families navigate end-of-life transitions with grace, courage, and compassion. Death Doula Alexis provides emotional support, practical guidance, and space to explore life's deepest questions. Through grief support, workshops, and education, Without Fear is breaking the taboo around death and empowering people to embrace mortality as part of living fully. Visit withoutfeardoula.com to learn more and find a safe space for all things life, death, and the in-between.
Boy, does this feel like good times today. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on. I love it. This is a show that's going to invite all of you to open up your heart because it's about dreams coming true. There's a road we get to take as we craft out and we lay a course that's in service of so many others. Sometimes the universe, God, whatever you believe in, have you ever wondered why, but better than why or how the universe knows how to line things up in a way that gets you ready for the most expansive part of who you're going to become. This is the time to change. And gratitude, leading with love, opens up more expansive possibilities than you can imagine. Crust busting your way to an awesome life.
I want to thank you all for tuning us in, turning us on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Welcome back. Like we were just talking about, grief does not give one single flip about your social calendar. It will erupt in the middle of your work meeting. It'll climb into bed with you. It will sit beside you in your car and remember that time. You will have something pop on the radio and it'll just whisper, "Oh, big sad feelings." And then there you are in traffic losing it at a red light. And if you're not careful, you'll start to feel ashamed of that grief. You'll start to think you're too emotional, too needy, too dramatic. We are expected to move on within days or weeks, but research shows that acute grief lasts an average of 6 months to 2 years. And that's just the acute phase. And we are pressured as professionals to start diagnosing complex grief at 6 months. Yikes. In 69, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross gave us 5 stages of grief. I'm sure you all know about the model. But those weren't meant to be a checklist. They were observations, not prescriptions, real grief loops. It spirals, it doubles back, and yes, sometimes it makes you laugh at a funeral or scream in a shower. It's chaotic. It's not always sobbing on a bathroom floor. Sometimes it's anger or numbness, sarcasm, scrolling, silence. Our society teaches us that grief should look graceful and quiet and tidy. Cry, but not too long. Be sad, but don't make others uncomfortable. Go to therapy, but also get back to work. And let's talk about a weird part of grief that I indulge in quite a bit. Laughing. It's not because we're cruel. It's because humor is how we breathe through the unbearable. Dark humor is not disrespectful. It's survival. Millennials especially have weaponized humor against the heaviness of life. We make jokes about trauma, dead parents, existential dread. Not because it's funny, but because laughter is oxygen in the dark. Sometimes when people are introduced to our social circle, I'll be like, "Hey, you know what me and Batman have in common?" And they'll be like, "I don't know, what? Like martial arts?" I'm like, "No, dead mom. Ha ha!" And they're like, "Whoa." But that's how it's easier for me to tell the story. In a 2019 study published in Personality and Individual Differences, they found that people who engage in dark humor often show greater psychological resilience and flexibility. I had one client who showed me a meme of a skeleton curled up on a tombstone that just read BRB. And we both laughed for a solid minute. Why? It was a dumb meme. Like, it wasn't even that great. But in that moment, they needed that. And something lifted. Humor can help metabolize pain. It interrupts the spiral. It allows the nervous system a second breath. It's not palatability that you're owing other people. You don't owe anybody that. If we don't laugh, we're gonna spiral. We've turned grief into memes, jokes, chaotic group texts. It lets air in when everything feels like suffocation. Because even just smiling, you've heard probably the technique to smile in the mirror for a minute every morning, and it will rewire your brain to associate the positive, you know, mood chemicals with that. And it does. Neuroscience also shows that the act of smiling, even if you're not happy, does improve mood. Grief strips away all the filters we usually wear in life. The version of you that shows up to work, answers emails, smiles politely in the grocery store lines. And that version sometimes goes offline when you're mourning. You have permission to not make sense to anyone else. Cry at dog food commercials. Refuse to clean your house for a month. Buy a houseplant and name it after the person that you lost. One of my clients once said, "I don't know who I was anymore after my dad died. I felt like a walking bruise. Everything hurt." And that stuck with me. Grief is deeply personal and deeply strange. I've watched people keep voicemail recordings and listen to them every night for a year. I've seen someone throw a goodbye party for their dad's recliner because they felt like that was the last piece of them that they had. I've seen someone turn their beloved ashes into pottery. I've seen people isolate completely, not answer a single text, and then one day just show up again. And I'm gonna take a risk here. Because I want you to understand that it's okay to do this stuff. I've never played this before, and this has been something I've kept tightly to myself for 11 years. Because one of the examples that I say is you might keep a voicemail that someone left you and then play it. Just like I do. You can feel rage at people who move on too fast. You can avoid their favorite song and talk to them out loud in the car, at night, in bed. That's not madness, that's love. I'm always afraid I'm going to forget what her voice sounds like. And that file is saved on a cloud, on an external, on my phone, on my computers. It's everywhere. And eventually, that weirdness softens, not because you shoved it down, but because you came up for air. I've watched people create rituals around the strangeness, hosting grief dinners where everyone shares a strange thing that they've done, creating art out of weird grief journals, and making playlists of songs that don't make sense to anyone else. Your grief isn't required to make sense. It's yours. It's your grief. It's your feelings, your love. But sometimes, that's exactly what grief feels like, a bruise that other people can't see, but one that you bump into constantly. Grief isn't just about missing someone. It's about losing a version of yourself. You lose roles, you lose rituals, you lose shared jokes, shared routines, and a shared future. I have a comic that is on my refrigerator. It's an old comic. I don't even think it runs anymore. It's called Pearls Before Swine. And it's one of the characters talking to their mom, and essentially it's a mother knows best kind of joke or whatever. And one of the characters is a speech impediment, and they're talking back and forth and is talking to their mother character about, well, I did this thing and I should have known better. And the mother recalls trying to tell them better. And the mom at the end of it essentially goes, well, everybody else know. And that was something that my mom would say to me when I would do something I would learn the hard way. Is she would just send me a text if I was texting, or she would just blurt it out over the phone. I was like, well, everybody else know, dummy, you know? And it just like you lose those inside jokes, you lose those things. And the brain is trying to reconcile that loss. And sometimes it does that through identity shifts. Suddenly you might change your hair, you're gonna cut your hair, you're gonna quit your job, you're gonna start a new religion, you're gonna get a tattoo that you thought you would never get. You're desperately trying to change something. And these things might seem impulsive, but they're often expressions of post-traumatic growth. Research shows that up to 70% of people experience some kind of positive psychological change after significant loss, including a deeper sense of purpose, more meaningful relationships, or new perspectives in life. You are being forced to redefine who you are because who you were no longer exists. And you might feel weird now. But that weirdness is often your soul just reshaping itself. And I want to tell you my weird story, and then we're going to get out of here. I was walking into Walmart one day, and Memorial Day and Mother's Day fall very close together. So you know how they always have their seasonal display at the front of the store. So I walk in and I look over, and it's stuff to be left at gravesides. And Mother's Day stuff. So, like cemetery stuff and mom stuff. And I lost it. And I don't know what the Walmart greeter thought. She must have thought I was nuts. I just lost it, like full on ugly crying, just like full out. Then I went out and collected myself in the car. And I was just like, oh my God. Oh my God, how embarrassing. And then I walked back in and I saw it again. And I stood there for a second and I just started laughing like a crazy person. And the Walmart greeter was just like, because I was laughing because my mom would have made fun of me for that. And it made me laugh. But to that person that day, I am their weird person story that I'm sure they told at least one other person. And that it's okay. So here's what I want you to take from this episode. Grief is weird. It's messy. It's human. You don't have to do it perfectly. You don't have to look normal. You just have to feel your way through it. We are all transformed by loss, and in that transformation, there's beauty, even if it's bizarre. I'm Alexis Hughes, and this is Without Fear, and I am here to remind you that you are not broken. You're grieving, you're getting through it, and you're allowed to be weird about it. Grief makes you weird because love makes us human, and your humanity is not an inconvenience. I want you all to be well. Take some time for yourself. If you need me, I'm withoutfeardoula@gmail.com, at withoutfeardoula on social media, and withoutfear.com, withoutfeardoula.com, the regular old website, which is undergoing some maintenance. So if you need me, I'm here. Reach out, and I will see you next month when we talk about how Icarus laughed as he fell. Have a great evening.
I'm Death Doula Alexis Hughes, and you've been listening to Without Fear, Life, Death, and Everything in Between. Join me every third Monday, 3:30 p.m. Pacific, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard, on Transformation Talk Radio for honest conversations about life's final chapter. Together, we'll break down barriers around mortality and empower you with practical tools to start meaningful conversations with your loved ones about end-of-life wishes. To learn more about end-of-life support and my work as a death doula, visit withoutfeardoula.com. Thanks for listening.